Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, listener. Greetings, fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 92 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and I'm transmitting to you today from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside time and space. Today, I am going to be discussing and reviewing the Star Wars RPGs by Fantasy Flight Games. So this includes Edge of the Empire, Force and Destiny, and Age of Rebellion. So these are three separate games, sort of, but they all use the same system. So I'm just kind of talking about them for the most part as a single entity. However, the majority of my experience has been with Edge of the Empire. I do have the Force and Destiny book, and I've run the beginner game for that. And yeah, I have zero experience with Age of Rebellion. So this will probably be my final Star Wars episode, at least for a while. I've done quite a few in the last few seasons talking about the game. I've had some other people on the show to talk about the game. I've talked about my adventures that I ran in the game a bit. And to be honest, I was kind of thinking I was done talking about it. However, I've had quite a few of you ask me, you know, what I think of it and why I've decided not to run it anymore, and kind of asking for basically my review of the game and the system. And I was originally planning to do that and then decided not to, mainly because I came to the conclusion that it would ultimately not be a very favorable review. And I tend to try to review things that I like. I try to be a positive person. I don't know that there's much to be gained by, you know, bashing something. And I just rather spend my time talking about things that I really like, because, you know, there's the old saying, all press is good press, you know, and it's like, even by reviewing something I don't like and talking about how I don't like it, I'm still kind of promoting it in a way. And it's like, why spend all this time talking about something I don't like when I could spend that time talking about something that I do like and saying, hey, I think you should try this thing out because I think it's really cool. But all that said, I have had numerous requests to review this game, and I thought about it some more, and I'm like, well, maybe I should. I will try very hard to give a balanced review. In preparing for this, I made a list of pros and cons for the game. So, you know, I'm not just going to talk about things I don't like about it. I'll talk about things that I do like, so that hopefully, you know, you can come to your own conclusion based on what I say as far as what I like and what I don't like. Because it could be that some of the things I don't like, you're like, well, that wouldn't bother me. So, you know, that might temper your what you take away from my review. And the other thing is I don't know that I've seen a less than favorable review of this game. I mean, maybe I just haven't found them, but it seems like every review I've read have been these glowing positive reviews. And, you know, if I were someone that didn't know anything about the game and I was just going by reviews, I would think, wow, this is an awesome game. I should try it. So I almost feel like I owe it to you, listener, and the RPG community at large to give my opinion, since it's less than positive. So there's at least one, you know, less than 5-star review out there. I buy a lot of stuff online, and one of the reasons I buy so many things online is because I can read reviews, right? If I go to Target, you know, and I'm going to buy a coffee maker, I don't know anything about this coffee maker other than what I can see and, you know, what I can read on the box, which, you know, is all, you know, very favorably spun to sell this coffee maker, right? But if I go online to buy a coffee maker, I can read what 100 people who have purchased and used this coffee maker think of it, right? Now, what I do when I read reviews is I always start with, well, I usually read just the most recent first. But if I'm reading reviews of something and it's just 5 and 4 star review after review, at, you know, and they're all 5 or 4 stars, I start looking for the 1 or 2 star reviews. Because it's like, I don't want to just know what the people that love this thing have to say. I also want to know what the people that hate this thing have to say. You know, and a lot of times, you know, you'll be looking at a product, say on Amazon, and you're reading all these 5-star reviews and you're like, wow, this thing sounds awesome. This sounds exactly like what I'm looking for. But then you go and you read some of the lower reviews and you're like, oh, hang on. Maybe this won't work for me, you know. And for whatever reason, I've just found that a lot of things that I've bought online seem to be over-reviewed or overrated for whatever reason. There'll be tons and tons of people that are giving something 5-star reviews, and then I get the thing, and I'm like, man, this is 3 stars at best. What are these people thinking, giving it 5-star reviews? But anyway, wow, huge tangent. So I, long story short, I decided to do an episode talking about this game, giving my review of it, my thoughts on it. Now, I've run the game and I've played the game. Actually, I'm still playing in a campaign. So I ran quite a bit of Edge of the Empire. And like I said, I ran a little bit of Force and Destiny as far as the beginner game. And the campaign I'm playing in is Edge of the Empire, but I'm actually just started playing a different character. And the character I'm playing now is built largely from Age of Rebellion and Force and Destiny character options. So, but again, I haven't had any real experience at this point playing Age of Rebellion, but the vast majority of what I'm going to talk about today really applies to all the games, so that shouldn't matter too much. But I thought I'd get that out there, just full disclosure. All right, so it's always good to cover the positive things first, right? Get a good taste in our mouth to start out with. So I'll start out by talking about the pros of this system and what I like about the game. So the first good thing about this game, and this is probably honestly the biggest good thing about the game, is it's Star Wars. Now, that might sound a little cheeky, but it's true. And honestly, that's the biggest selling point of this game for me. And the number one reason that I gave it as good of a shot as I did. And I'll probably come back to this at the end of the review. But I think if I would have played this system for any other game other than Star Wars, if it would have just been some generic space opera game or anything else other than Star Wars, I don't think I would have devoted anything near the time and effort that I did. I think I would have probably tried playing it once or twice, maybe tried running it once or twice, and that would have been it. But because it was Star Wars, I kept trying to like it. I really wanted to like it, and I kept trying to like it. So it's Star Wars. Major, major pro right there. Another thing I like about the system is you do have a lot of options when it comes to creating your character. You're not nearly as limited as far as the concepts and the possibilities that you can realize when creating a character as you are in like a class-based game like, say, D&D or Numenera or the various D20 versions of Star Wars. So I like that. You have a lot of options in character advancement and development as well, which is really cool. And you're also never locked into one path, which is also cool. So you start out with your profession, I believe it's called, which is basically your class. I just wish game designers could all just call things the same thing. You know, can we just call a class a class? Can we just call a level, and let's not call it a profession or a tier just to try to be different when it's the same damn thing? Can we just all call things the same thing? For God's sake, so confusing. But anyway, so you choose your class, and you know, that's the only class you're ever going to have. But then you have all these specializations, which are talent trees. If you've ever played an MMO, you know what a talent tree is, and that's exactly what they are. You can choose any talent tree that you want. You just buy it with XP. Now, if it's a talent tree associated with a class other than your class, you do pay a tax for that. But that's it. There's no limit to how many non-class talent trees you can get or how high you can advance within them. So that's really cool. So, you know, maybe you start out playing a bounty hunter, which is one of the Edge of the Empire classes. And after a while, you're like, I'm just not really into bounty hunter anymore. I want to do other things. You can totally do that. Now, you'll always be a bounty hunter and you'll always have to pay that tax for getting specializations outside of bounty hunter. But you can do it, which is a lot better than other games that I've played, which is cool. And it also allows you to realize character concepts that don't fit well into their class system. Right. So, you know, you can take a little of this and a little of that and come up with something truly your own, which is pretty cool. If you're an MMO player or another player who likes talent trees and character builds and coming up with the most optimized thing that you can, then you'd probably like this aspect of the game at least, because you can totally do that. And you can spend countless hours trying to come up with a build to do a specific thing and finding the best bonuses and all that stuff. If you're into that kind of thing, then you may like it. The books themselves physically are well made. They're well bound. I haven't had any problems with any of my books as far as like pages falling out or anything. High quality paper. Now, one downside, I know I'm in my prose section, but one downside with the books is the pages are very glossy. So it actually can make them more difficult to read. Sometimes you have to like be tilting the stupid book around just so that you can see through the glare. So that's kind of a pain. They have a lot of great art. The art's usually pretty good. Although I have to say that usually the art on the cover is about the worst art in the book. I'm looking at you, Han Solo, on the cover of the book, who looks nothing like Han Solo. but most of the art inside the book is pretty good. So don't judge the book on its cover, because for whatever reason, they seem to put the worst piece of art on the front of the book. I'm not sure why. The obligation mechanic from Edge of the Empire is a fun way that you can bring some role playing into the game, and a way that you can have your character's background actually matter and have an impact on what's happening in the game. Of course, all of this is completely dependent on GM implementation. So your personal experience with obligation could be anything from great to terrible to just mediocre, depending on how good your GM is at using that and bringing that into the story in a way that feels right and makes sense and is fun. I don't personally have much experience with the duty or morality mechanics, so I can't really talk to those, but those are the equivalents of obligation in the other two games. Another mechanic that is pretty cool in the game is the destiny mechanic, and this gives the players some ways to have a little bit more control over the game. They can declare some things story-wise, like, oh, I did bring another blaster power pack with me. Things like that by spending destiny. There are certain special abilities that use it, and they can also use it to enhance a role to give them a better chance at success, theoretically. More on that later. Or to hinder a role from the GM to give the NPC a better chance at failure, again, theoretically. More on that later. And I like how the destiny is a zero-sum resource that both the players and the GM use. So the players use the light side points, the GM uses the dark side points. Anytime a player uses a light side point, it turns into a dark side point, which the GM can now use. Anytime the GM uses a dark side point, it becomes a light side point, which now the players can use. So that, at least in theory, is cool. You know, you could theoretically have this kind of back and forth, but in actual play, I've often see it just end up being a wash, because the GM spends a point to make the roll harder, and then the player spends a point to make the roll easier, at which point, you know, it's net zero. It's like we just wasted our time with this whole thing. We could have just not done it and had the same result. So, well, not necessarily. Again, the dice are complicated, so nothing's quite what it seems. But basically speaking, I will say that when it comes to the space and vehicle combat, which is basically the same thing in the system, this is the most satisfying way of doing it that I've seen in any of the Star Wars games that I've played, and I've played pretty much all of them. I think that the next closest was West End Games system, but I really like how space and vehicle combat is handled theoretically. A lot of stuff with this game I like theoretically, but when it comes into practice, it's not so great. But we'll get into that in the cons section. The modding of ships and vehicles and equipment is really cool and fun. And again, is very appropriate for Star Wars. So anything from putting a better hyperdrive on your starship to modifying your blaster so it does more damage. That's really cool. Really a fun thing that, you know, you don't see in like D&D. You know, you can't really modify your sword, right? You can go get a better sword or maybe get your sword enchanted if your DM does it that way. But, you know, you can't just sharpen it and make it do more damage or something. So that's pretty cool. I really like in Edge of the Empire having a starship as a group asset and home base. I think that's really cool and really fun. And it's this cool thing that you can have in Star Wars where your home base can travel around and go to different places, which is really cool. And there's a lot you can do with that. The dice system can theoretically, again, bring out some fun and interesting moments with the right group of people. If you have people at your table that are really into improvisational stuff and really get into interpreting the dice, they can facilitate or encourage some fun, interesting things coming up. Of course, I would argue that you don't need the dice for that. That if you have players that are good at that kind of thing, they can probably do that without prompts from the dice. The published adventures that I've seen for the game are well written. I haven't run any of the longer ones in their entirety to know how well they play and how railroady they are. They seem pretty railroady, but they seem well written and interesting and fun as far as that goes. Like I kind of mentioned before, character advancement is very similar to in an MMO like World of Warcraft. So if you're into that kind of thing, you might really like this game. All right, so that's the pros, which actually it seems like quite a bit. Definitely more than I thought I'd be able to. I was really trying to come up with stuff for the pros. I was really digging deep to try to find some good things to say. So now we'll get into the cons, things I don't so much like about the game. And unfortunately, this is going to be a longer discussion. But hey, I can't like everything, guys. Sorry. All right. So the first one, and this is a pretty big one, I think. The game is really expensive to get into and to play. It's even more expensive to run it as a GM. So first off, there's the dice. You gotta buy dice. You can't use the dice that you've used in every other RPG you've ever played. Now, someone might say, no, Lex, you can. There's a chart in the book that tells you how to use normal numbered polyhedral dice. Yeah. Go ahead and try that, okay? One of the huge drawbacks of the system and really kind of the main deal breaker for me is how slow it is. And you take a system that's already way too slow and now you got to do conversions on a chart to even know what your dice are showing you. And it's going to get even really more slow. And then imagine having huge dice pools where you've got three or four proficiency dice and one or two ability dice and some boost dice and some setback dice and then your difficulty dice and all of those you got to cross-reference on this table to get the... Yeah. I think you'll do that about once or twice and you'll throw something out the window. But so that doesn't fly with me. You have to buy the dice if you want to play or buy an app, a dice roller app. There's just no getting around it. Each player is going to need a minimum of two sets of these dice. And I think they run about $15 a pop, you know, if you pay full price for them. So that's like $30 for dice just to be able to play. And that's for a beginning character. Once you get very far in the game at all, you're really going to need three sets of dice per person. Now, you can share dice, but, you know, some people are weird about sharing their dice and you know, some people... like want to keep their dice, and it's like, well, if we put all our dice in a big pile, then how do we know who's who's at the end? Of course, there's only one place you can buy these dice. There's only one manufacturer of them, so they are literally all the same, which I guess would be another con that, like, you can't get, like, your own custom dice like you can any other game that you play. Even Fate, there's all kinds of Fate dice out there you can get, but nobody else can make the FFG dice because they want your money. They want your money really bad. So you could share dice, assuming everybody's okay with that, but then that's going to slow your game down even more, because then, you know, every time someone needs to get a roll or make a roll, they need to get the dice from the pile in the middle of the table, and you can't, like, you know, like what I like to do in a game like this is I have dice pools already assembled, like sitting by my character sheet. So if I'm in a combat, I already have my dice pool ready to go. So when my turn comes, I just pick them up and throw them. I don't have to sit there and count dice and crap while everybody's staring at me. But if you're all sharing dice, you're not going to be able to do that unless you have a ridiculous amount of dice. In which case, you know, you're right back to everybody buying three sets of dice. The books are expensive. They're all hardback. Even these, you know, skinny little books that could and probably should be a paperback are hardback, and they're expensive. The books are not geared toward either players or GMs. They try to do a little bit of everything, like every book. So, you know, if you're a player, it's not so bad, because you can get away with just buying the core. Well, you can get away with just buying the core book, which is $60. But if you're a player, you can do that. Or if you want to go a little further, you could buy the class book for your favorite class, and you'd be kind of okay with just that. But still, I mean, those class books, I think, are like $30. So you're talking like close to $100 just for a player. Now, the GM is where it's really bad, because the thing is those class books, which should be for players, also have stuff for the GM in them, like systems and whatnot. And the books for the GM, like, for instance, one of my favorite books in Edge of the Empire, Lords of Nalhutta, which should be just a GM book, also has player options in it, right? So it wouldn't be quite so bad if there were books that, like, these are for the GMs, players don't need these books, and books that these are for the players, GMs don't need them. But they don't do that because they want your money. They want you to have to buy all the books, no matter what side of the table you're sitting on. So yeah, there's that. And the other part of that is, whether you're a GM or a player, chances are good that any book you buy beyond the core book, you're only going to use parts of it. Right? So you're paying all this money for this expensive hardback book, and you're not even going to use all of it. Then there's also the thing that there's, as of right now, three separate games, each with their own core book, which is mostly redundant material. So if you're running Edge of the Empire and you want people to be able to play force using characters, and you want them to have access to more than just one generic specialization and I think three different force powers, then you're going to want to get the Force and Destiny book, which again is $60, and which about 70 to 80% of which is practically reprinted from the core book from Edge of the Empire, which you already have. So you're paying $60 for, like, you know, maybe a quarter of that book that you need. So that's not great, right? And then God forbid, if you're a completionist and you want to have access to everything, you're going to buy three core books, which are kind of duplicates of one another, which with a small percentage that's different in each one. So yeah, not to mention all that wasted paper, man. You know, trees don't grow on trees, people. All right, so that's all cost, right? Now, if you're independently wealthy or whatever and you don't care about money, then maybe that's not a problem. But most of us, you know, we only have so much money to spend on our hobbies. And, you know, even if that amount you have is a fairly large amount that you can spend every month, there's other games out there, right? There's other things you want to buy, right? You don't want to have to drop your whole load on just one game. All right, the core book. Now, this is mainly talking about Edge of the Empire, but I'm certain it's true for the other games too, is missing many common vehicles and ships that you would think should be in a core book. For instance, the Edge of the Empire core book, you're not going to find stats for a Star Destroyer. And which might be like, well, how often are you going to see a Star Destroyer in the Outer Rim? You could maybe argue that, although it seems like they're fairly common. But you also won't find stats for a Customs Corvette, which is a ship that you will be seeing a lot. It should be in the core book. It's not, and in fact, it's not in any book. Even worse. Now, a lot of the ships, like the Star Destroyer, you can find in other books, which is another reason to go buy more books. Also, the books themselves are very poorly laid out, especially the core books, with rules that should be together instead in different sections. For instance, the rules on modifying starships and weapons and whatnot are located in a couple different places. And more than once, this has led to confusion with my gaming groups because people rightfully assume that the section on modifying things has all of the modifying rules in it, but it doesn't. There's some over in the starship section too. And not only is that annoying to just try to grok the system, but it's super annoying during actual play when you're trying to look something up and you don't even know which section of the book to go to because things are spread out all over the place. Also, part of the terrible, I will say it, terrible layout of these books, they look nice. If you just look at it, it looks nice. If you just maybe read it, it looks okay. But as soon as you start to try to use it as a reference, you know, for like a role-playing game, it's terrible. So for instance, the vehicle and the NPC stat blocks are terrible, especially when you get to the attack section. So if you don't believe me, just look up any NPC or ship. Like, look up a Star Destroyer. Oh, wait, you probably don't have a Star Destroyer. I don't know. Look up a ship or something, and you get to the attacks where all the weapons are, and it's this huge block of text. So you could have a Star Destroyer. It's got all these different weapons and weapon systems. It's a block of text. There's no indenting. There's no spacing. There's no bolding or anything to help you navigate that during play and find where's the ion cannons. You got to go through this huge block of text. NPCs, same way. Huge pain in the ass. So it's very hard to find what you need in that block of text while you're actually running the game. Also, when you're talking about vehicle or starship combat, again, it's the same. You not only need to know the stats of the starship, but you need to know the stats of the people using the starship. So for instance, let's say your players are flying away from a Star Destroyer who's shooting at them. You need to look in the Star Destroyer stats for, you know, the turbo lasers and how much damage they do, but you need to then look into an NPC stat for an Imperial gunner or whatever to know how many dice this person has to roll to hit with the turbo laser, right? And what do you know? Those two stat blocks are in totally different parts of the book, or could even be in totally different books if you're using a ship from another book, for instance, than the core book. So it's like, you know, why would you not have the relevant dice pools with the ship? Like, here's a Star Destroyer. Here's what the average pilot's dice pool will be for maneuvering. Here's what the average gunner's dice pool will be for gunnery. Doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to do. So because of all of this, you either as a GM have to prepare your own stat blocks ahead of time that have all the information you need and are laid out in such a way that you can find what you need quickly, which is going to take a lot of prep time. Oh my God, it's a lot of time. Or your game is going to grind to a halt every time you have to deal with these stat blocks because you're going to have to be looking things up in multiple parts of the book or multiple books and trying to find your way through this block of text. And it's just going to eat a lot of game time, and you're going to have players sitting there twiddling their thumbs. The dice system for the game is very slow, and it gets overly tedious and tiresome, especially in long sessions. You know, so the first hour can be okay, but after that, you're just like, oh my God, can we just know if I hit the thing or not and go on? Do we need a 5-minute discussion with every shot of my blaster? So this has been referred to many times on this podcast as the relentless granularity. Combats, especially, drag on forever. Each person's turn in the combat can take many minutes as first the dice pool is assembled. So, you know, you got to figure out how many of what kinds of dice you need from your attribute and your skill. And then the GM tells you if there's any setback dice you need to add. And then you might have some talents that give you boost dice, or you might have some bullshit reason you think that GM should give you a boost dice. So you finally assemble all these dice, then you roll them. Then you stare at all these symbols and figure out what cancels what out. And then finally, after all of that, you have your result, which is so many of this symbol, so many of that symbol. And then you have to figure out what that means. So in the time it takes to do one die roll for one action in Star Wars, in a game like D&D, you could probably resolve the entire turn order of your players. Like, all four of your players could go in the time it takes one player to go in Star Wars. And again, you know, it's not so bad at the beginning of the session, yeah, whatever, but after 4 hours, like, that gets really annoying. And especially when you have a session that there is a lot of dice rolling, you look back at, like, especially combat. You know, if you have a session where maybe there's a two or three combats, the session's over and you look back at, like, what actually happened in game time, and you're like, oh my god, we just gamed for 4 hours and, like, hardly anything happened. Because every round of the combat takes so long. It's like 15th plus level play in 3.5 D&D or Pathfinder. It's just crazy. Now, it's possible, I haven't seen it, but it's possible that with extremely high levels of proficiency with the system by everybody at the table, it's got to be everybody, not just one or two people, that you could maybe mitigate some of the speed problem. But even if that's true, which I'm not even convinced that's true, I've never seen it, but maybe, you know, maybe if everybody at your table is just hardcore into this game and you all know it inside and out, maybe, you know, you could get to that point. But even then, I think you're still going to hit a hard wall of just a limit of how fast this system can be run if you run it as presented. Now, you can't speed it up by starting to just go back to pass fail and ignoring a lot of the BS that the dice throw your way. But then at that point, why don't we just roll regular polyhedrals and use a less clunky system? So because of this issue with the speed of the system, as a GM, you will probably be tempted at the very least to hand wave away the complex dice results just to get things moving, just so that we can get somewhere tonight. And again, as soon as you do that, you kind of completely negate any benefit of the bizarre dice in the first place, and you might as well just be using regular dice and a much faster mechanic. Another big issue with the system is balancing encounters is exceptionally difficult, and there's literally zero guidance given for doing so. Beyond the book literally tells you to add more adversaries to make a combat more difficult. No shit, Sherlock. You know, this is one of my big issues with Numenera as a GM is Numenera. Well, Numenera gives you a little guidance, but it's inherently flawed and useless. You know, so I don't like these games where it's like you're on your own, GM, you know, as far as figuring out what would be a good challenge for your players, what's going to challenge them without killing their characters. You know, you're on your own. Now, I know that, you know, 5th edition D&D's encounter system isn't perfect, and, you know, some people have a lot of problems with it, but at least you get a ballpark idea of this is how I make an easy encounter, this is how I make a medium encounter, this is how I make a hard encounter, this is how I make a deadly encounter. And then, you know, you can adjust within that with your experience with your own group and your own players and their party makeup, and you can find that sweet spot. With this system, man, you are on your own. There's nothing to help you. Also, starship and vehicle combat is essentially a whole nother system compared to personal combat. So this is yet another thing that your group needs to learn and wrap their heads around if you're going to have any starship or vehicle combat in the game. And this is another avenue that's going to slow down your game until everybody's, you know, knows it inside and out. Now, one pro or good thing about the game that I forgot to mention in the first section is that unlike other Star Wars games I've played, Force users are fairly well balanced compared to non-Force using PCs. But there's a downside to that. Well, there's a few downsides to it. One of the downsides is you're never going to be able to make anything resembling a Force user that you may have seen in any of the Star Wars canon, whether that's the movies or Clone Wars or Rebels. You're just not going to do it unless you have a ridiculous amount of XP. We're talking thousands of XP. Also, kind of this is a little pet peeve of mine, Force users in this game cannot deflect blasters anything like what you see in the canon, in the movies and TV shows. The closest you can possibly get to that is only with a very specific build involving taking multiple specializations and taking very specific talents. And even then, you're not really there. You're getting close, but you're not really there. And basically what it comes down to is you have to spend strain to deflect those blaster bolts, which means, you know, you can only do it for so long, and then you're out of strain, and now you're unconscious. When did you ever see Obi-Wan or Anakin pass out from the effort of deflecting blaster bolts all day long? Yeah, that's kind of a flaw there. Also, another downside to the way Force users are balanced with everyone else is that because of this, if you're going to be at all proficient with using the Force, you're kind of forced to suck at pretty much everything else. Or vice versa, right? So if you want to have a character that's like, say like Anakin Skywalker, and you want to be good, you know, with tinkering and repairing mechanical things, and you want to be a good pilot and some stuff like that, well, if you do that, you're not going to have much left for your Force skills and abilities, and you're going to be pretty weak sauce Force user. Or if you're like, I want to be able to use the Force, then you're not going to really have much in the way of the more general skills. And it's always going to be that way because, again, they're balancing the Force users with the non-Force users, which means, you know, character A is a non-Force user. Character B is a Force user. They both get the same amount of XP to spend, but the Force user has twice as many things. Well, probably more than twice as many things to spend that XP on, right? So it's rough. Personally, if I were going to run this game and I was going to have Force users, I would probably just want to have everybody be Force users. And then I would just give them a shit ton of XP to start out with so that you can actually feel like you're a Force user and not just someone doing parlor tricks. But yeah, having a mixed party of Force users and non-Force users, I mean, the characters will be fairly balanced as far as that goes, but I think that your Force users are going to be not super happy with their characters, and they're going to probably tend to be outshined by the non-Force users who have less things to dump their XP into, so can kind of specialize more. And that reminds me that this isn't actually something on my list here, but another issue with the game, and I'm not sure how much of an issue this is because I haven't seen it really come up myself enough to really know, but it seems like you can really get into problems as far as PC balance if you have players in your group who are hyper specializing and players who are going really broad. Because that's one of the things in this game is there's always this trade-off between trying to get really good at one thing or being able to do a lot of different things. And yeah, I don't know about that, but it seems like that could be a real problem if you have players in your group that are on, you know, extreme ends of that spectrum. They're going to be very unbalanced with one another. So I'm not sure how that would fall out. Also, regarding the talent trees, there are a lot of uninteresting talents or talents that you just don't want that you have to take in order to get this other talent that you want to take. So it's basically like a talent tax. It's like, oh, hey, if you want to get this cool talent, you have to take this totally lame talent that you're never going to use first. And I don't like that. I don't like taking shit that doesn't really fit my character or isn't beneficial to my character, just so that I can later take something that does fit my character or is beneficial to my character. Another problem, you know, other than there's a lot of talents in the game that are just not very interesting, not very inspiring, or not very effective, there's also ones that are so bad that they basically, quote unquote, give you an ability that most GMs would probably let you do anyway. For instance, there are talents where in a particular skill, if you get a triumph, which is basically Star Wars version of a critical success, you get to count that as an extra success, right? It's like most GMs would let you do that anyway. If you're like, hey, for my triumph effect, can we just pretend I had an extra success? Like, most GMs would probably be like, sure. But no, there's a talent that does that, which kind of implies that as a GM, you shouldn't do that the rest of the time, right? Or else the talent is completely useless, which I kind of think it is completely useless. It's going to be one of those ones you have to take to get something else. And finally, the dice are very swingy. It's hard, I would say, in my experience so far, impossible to feel like your character is ever actually good at anything. Even with a huge dice pool, an unfavorable result seems just as likely as a favorable result. And the favorable result will often have drawbacks. So how favorable is it? A complete success where you just succeed at the thing you're trying to do and there's no downside seems really rare, even with a huge dice pool. In fact, it doesn't really seem to be influenced by the size of your dice pool. It seems like your chances of success are just what they are, and it doesn't really matter how many dice you have. Now, if you don't have enough dice, the chance of success goes way down, but having a lot of dice doesn't really make it go up like you think it would. So it seems like most rolls end up with either failure, or failure with complications, or failure with some kind of a boon, or success with complications. Right? Like, most of the rolls are one of those things, none of which are like a quote-unquote good outcome. So your roll that it's like, hey, I get a success and I either get some boons or I just get success, seem really rare. Now, this can be great for comedy if you want to have comedy at your table, but it's not so great for feeling like your character is competent at something that you've dumped a lot of XP into. Right? Like my character that I'm playing in a Star Wars campaign, I had I think I had 4 in the relevant attribute, and then I had a 3 in the skill, which meant I was rolling 3 of the proficiency dice, 3 yellow dice and a green die. You'd think like I'd do okay with like a difficulty 2, which is like your standard difficulty. Yeah, not so much. So now I've got a 5 attribute and a 4 skill. We'll see how that goes. Now, I haven't done statistical analysis of this, so maybe someone has and will say, oh no, you know, you have this percentage chance to get an unmitigated success. But I'm just telling you the impression, like what it feels like both running and playing the game. And it feels like even with good dice pools, the PC having just things go your way and you succeed, like, seems rare. Seems much more common that something goes bad. All right, so there's my pros and cons. So bottom line, I really want to like this game. I really, really do. I tried really hard to like this game because it's Star Wars, and I like Star Wars. And I like the idea of playing a Star Wars game. But I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan of this game. For me personally, I don't want to run it. Like, I do not want to run this game. It's not fun. In fact, frankly, this is the most unfun game I have ever run. Ever. It takes loads of preparation to have any kind of confidence and fluidity during the session. Like hours and hours of retyping out stat blocks and just boring, tedious shit like that that I shouldn't have to do. I should be able to, at most, just photocopy a page from the book, right? I shouldn't have to type out my own stat blocks. Also, the player characters are so complex that it's hard for the GM to have a feel for kind of, you know, what they can do, what their power level is. You know, there's no help with encounter balancing. You're totally on your own there. So there's really no way to know ahead of time how challenging any given encounter is going to be. Or at least it's really difficult. It's not like D&D where it's like, oh, they're 12th level. I just from that, I have an idea of what they're capable of, right? Star Wars is like, they have 537 XP. What's that mean? I don't know. They have 537 XP. And that's assuming that the players all keep track of how much XP they've earned. You know, and that alone is confusing. Because on the character sheet, there's your total XP that you've ever earned, and then how much XP you have that isn't spent. And it's confusing. I tell you what, for a game without any numbers on the dice, there's actually a lot of math in this game. So yeah, as a GM, not at all a fan, not something I ever want to run. Unfortunately, I guess if I want to do Star Wars, I kind of have to, or I have to come up with my own system or hack some other system. Because I don't think we're going to see Star Wars RPG by a different game company anytime in the near future, unfortunately. But there you go. As a player, it's okay. I find myself getting bored a lot while playing just because every role takes so long. It's funny because I've heard so many people say, like people that love this game talk about how well it captures the feel of the movies, and I don't understand where these people are coming from. It's like Star Wars, I mean, it's fast-paced action. You know, this system is the opposite of fast-paced action. It's like, you know, what would take a second to happen on screen takes 5 minutes at your gaming table. You know, with D&D, it would take a minute. With Numenera, it would take, I don't know, 45 seconds. So yeah, it's not a great way to translate an action adventure game into this really slow, clunky system. I feel like as a player and as a GM, I want to avoid dice rolls as much as possible. Now, I'm sure some cheeky smartass out there is going to say, oh, well, that's a good thing. I like a game that encourages me not to roll the dice. No, that's a bad system. If it encourages you not to roll the dice, it's like, yeah, guys, our dice mechanic kind of sucks. So we really recommend you don't use it and try not to roll the dice unless you have to. That's bad design. As a player, I don't like how even with a 5 in an attribute and a 4 in a skill and various abilities giving me boost dice and removing setback dice and all that good stuff, I still don't feel like I'm actually good at anything. I feel like I'm just as likely to fail as succeed. In fact, it feels like I'm more likely to fail in some way than succeed. So honestly, if this wasn't Star Wars, if this was just some generic game or, you know, it was anything other than Star Wars, I wouldn't even give it the time of day. I probably would have read through the book and been like, ugh. I probably would have gotten as far as the dice and been like, oh, I'm not dealing with this. But hopefully I would have at least given it a shot. But then I would have been like, no, this isn't for me. The only reason I gave it such an intensive college try, and the only reason I enjoy playing it today at all, is because it's Star Wars. It's got nothing to do with the game, really. It's Star Wars. I get to wave around a lightsaber, or shoot a blaster, or fly an X-Wing. Like, that's why I like the game, and that's got nothing to do with the system. Now, I will say it's better than the various D20 versions of Star Wars, but honestly, that's really not saying much. Because those were terrible. So perhaps, maybe, if you and your players become super proficient with this game and you can just quote rules verbatim and you never have to look anything up, you might be able to mitigate some of the speed and clunkiness issues. But I still think even if that's the case, even if you can get to that level as a GM, it's still going to take a lot more prep time than you need with many other games. So if I look at this, for me personally, cost benefit analysis, it just doesn't add up for this game. The benefit I'm getting from it is not worth the cost of what I have to put into it. And you know, finally, to me it's very obvious that Fantasy Flight Games is very money grubbing. Everything from requiring you to buy their special dice that no one else can manufacture and that are overpriced to the way they pretty much force you to buy numerous books to do anything with the game as a GM. me personally, I spent way too much money. It's embarrassing. Embarrassing how much money I spent on this game just to find out I don't really like it that much. You know, especially, you know, you look at Numenera, it's like you buy one book. You know, it's like, yeah, even if you, yeah, you pay full price, it's like $60 or something. You get on Amazon, it's like 30, I don't know. But even at $60, it's like you buy one book, you can run the game for a long time. I talked about in my GM Intrusions podcast how, you know, I really believe with just the Numenera core book, you could run Numenera for a year easy for your players and everybody would have a blast. The only time you really start getting into problems with just the core book in Numenera is if you're running multiple campaigns with the same players, because then you start seeing the same character combinations come up again and again, because there's not a lot of variety in just the core book. And you know, the creatures, you know, you're going to start running out of different creatures to use. But I mean, Numenera is so easy just to make anything up for a creature. I mean, that system is so simple that it's like you don't really need a monster manual. You can just make shit up if you want to. It's not hard to do, you know. Or even better, D&D, which you can play for free. You know, if this were D&D, I could have gotten the level of experience to know if I wanted to invest in this game or not for nothing. I could have gotten the basic rules for free. You know, I could have run some adventures and without spending a dime, I could have known if D&D was for me or not. So there you go. And now we've got the 5th edition SRD. So now it's going to be even easier to do that because there's even more of the rules available for free now. So yeah. So that's my review of Star Wars. It's not all bad, you know, and hopefully I was detailed enough in my pros and cons that I'm hoping that it's possible for a listener to listen to this. And even though I am not a fan of this game, listen to my review and say, hey, you know, I think this game sounds cool. I think this sounds like something I'd like, because the things Lex doesn't like about it either don't bother me or I actually think that's cool. I actually like those things. Right. So that's what I'm hoping, you know. It would have been very easy to get on here and just rant about everything I don't like about this game, because I'll be honest, I'm unhappy with my experience with this game. And I'd say it's largely because of the amount of money I've dropped on it. You know, I have easily spent way more money on Star Wars than I spent on D&D. And I love D&D, and I'm probably going to run D&D and play D&D for years to come, you know. And I still, like, if I were running a Star Wars campaign, I would still feel like I don't really have everything I need. There would still be a few more books that I feel like I really need to have to be able to have the information I need. And I've already spent, you know, at least a couple hundred dollars, I think. And hell, I've spent $120 just on the stupid two core books that I bought. So, yeah, you know, if it weren't for that, I might be a little less, like, hostile sounding towards the game. But yeah, I mean, what a waste of money it was for me. So buyer beware, you know. So you know, if you listen to this review and you think, hey, this game sounds awesome, then I definitely, you know, try it out. It's definitely a well produced game as far as like the quality of the books and whatnot. Again, the layout's terrible. I'd give it like a 1 star as far as being a usable RPG book. But they look nice and there's lots of pretty pictures to look at. Yeah, I guess that's all I think I've covered the big things. So, you know, if you're on the fence, I hope that this gave you some more information to make your decision. But yeah, this probably, like I said, is going to be the last time I talk about this game, maybe ever, at the very least anytime in the near future, because again, I'm not running it anymore. I have no plans of running it. I'm honestly, right now, I'm still debating whether to keep my books or try to get something for them on eBay. There's part of me that's just reluctant to get rid of them just because I do love Star Wars, and there might come a day where I'm like wanting to put myself through trying to run this game again. I don't know. maybe, I don't know. It, you might be able to have some fun with it just kind of hand-waving a lot of stuff and not really getting sucked into the mechanical black hole of the game. But again, at that point, it's like, why are you even playing this game? You know, if I'm going to ignore a lot of the systems and everything, why not just figure out a way to play Star Wars with the 5th edition system or with Cypher system, which wouldn't be hard to do, you know, or just go get the D6 West End Games version of Star Wars and just play that, you know, especially considering how expensive the books are. And, you know, of course, I guess I've already bought enough of them. But I don't know. So if you want to buy some Star Wars books used, let me know. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up episode 92 of Game Master's Journey. I hope you enjoyed the discussion of the Fantasy Flight game Star Wars RPGs. This week, if you love the game, more power to you. I'm not here to tell people what to like or what not to like. Again, I was not even planning to review it because I knew that it was going to be an overall negative review, but I have had so many people ask about my thoughts on it that I thought I would just do this for those people that are curious what I think about it. And again, you know, I've read so many glowing reviews. I feel like not the whole story isn't being told here. So I'm here to tell the rest of the story. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Google+ Lex Starwalker. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com. You can find everything you need there. I want to give a huge shout out to my tier 5 patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve. Yeah. Woo! Yes. Thank you very much, Steve, for your support. Thank you to all the patrons for your support. If you would like to help this podcast keep going and help Starwalker Studios keep going and give a little back, please visit starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney and scroll down to the bottom of the show notes. There's lots of ways that you can help out, including becoming a patron like Steve. And I really appreciate everybody's support. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on. Oh yeah, I guess I forgot to mention, you just know there's going to be a whole nother core book and line of products for The Force Awakens. Start saving your money now.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.